Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Basic biology we used to teach our children, when that is corrupted, then we should not be surprised if we have some very horrific consequences.
What's happening here with the race issue is really nothing different than what's happened with other issues with Marxism. They're just simply using, I think, racism as the wedge to get it into society, because it is a touchy issue.
When religion declines, we by nature are religious creatures, and we will find other things to fill that void.
When you understand the means of grace, we know where to find God. We know where to hear God. We know how to talk to God. Or more importantly, we know how God could talk to us.
College students graduating during COVID-19, love issues, etc.
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court has refused to hear a challenge to male-only military draft. And one, I have wondered for decades now, why would women want to be part of a military conscription? Why would they want to be part of the draft? I grew up knowing that when I was going to turn 18, that was a long, long time ago, that I would have to register with Selected Service. Now, I've gone my entire life. There hasn't been a draft. Maybe there never will be another one, but it is an issue of principle. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 8th of June. We're going to be talking about the Supreme Court's refusal to hear a challenge to a male-only military draft. Elaine Donnelly of the Center for Military Readiness will be our guest. We'll spend some time with Dr. John Bombaro, author of a recent column titled Challenging Consumerism. We'll discuss Christian preaching and consumerism. Pastor Paul Dare joins us for our Cultural Marxism series today, Reactions to the Critique of Cultural Marxism. Then Pastor Tom Baker is alongside to teach a Sunday school lesson on the rebuilding of the temple in Ezra and Nehemiah. Joining us to discuss the Supreme Court's refusal to hear a challenge to male-only military draft, Elaine Donnelly, founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness. She formerly served on the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services and on the Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces. Elaine, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to talk with you.
What does the Military Selective Service Act require?
Well, it's like an insurance policy. We don't know what may happen in the future if we had a catastrophic national emergency that was beyond the capability of the all-volunteer force. Selective service is a way of finding and registering a group of people, a cohort of men, who may be called upon, if needed, to fight to defend the nation in a time of national emergency. It's very rare that selective service has actually been implemented. It's an all-volunteer force, and it's been working very well since it was first established after the Vietnam era. But there are those who say because it registers only men that, well, this is sex discrimination, women should be included as well. But there are several flaws with this argument. By the way, registration applies to young men 18 to 25. If they do not register, there can sometimes be penalties having to do with Pell Grants or student loans, things like that. But I think it's very important to mention at this point, and sometimes advocates of including women on an involuntary basis forget this. Women have always served, volunteered to serve in time of national emergency, not just in the civilian world, but in the military as well. The nurse corps, the people who do support positions, the history of women in the military is a proud one. So there is absolutely no need to have a system that requires young women to register on the same basis as men. Part of the reason for that is the only reason that you register anyone, the only reason that you would call up anyone is for the kind of combat engagement with an adversary that involves physical strength. In this regard, men and women are not similarly situated. They're not the same. And even though the rules regarding women in land combat changed back in 2015, the physical differences between men and women have not changed. So my organization and several others filed a friend of the court brief with the Supreme Court. We asked them to deny the petition at this time. It's rightfully a decision to be made by Congress. The reason is Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution gives to Congress the right and the power and the responsibility to make policy for the armed forces. This is not a suitable function for federal courts. Not even the Supreme Court should be deciding an issue like this. And if they do see the issue again, maybe a year or two down the road, they will likely defer to the decision of Congress. That's what happened back in 1981. Congress said women will be exempt. The Supreme Court said, okay, we defer to Congress. The landmark case is called Roster versus Goldberg. The lawsuit, the one that was just turned away, tried to repeal Roster versus Goldberg, but it did not succeed, and now the ball shifts back to Congress where it belongs.
Tell us a little bit more about the amicus brief that the Center for Military Readiness filed in this case. What did that brief say?
Well, the brief was filed back in March, and we raised the constitutional argument because at the time we did not know what side the Biden administration was going to come down on. So we knew we had to raise the constitutional argument. Article 1, Section 8, as I just mentioned, gives to Congress the right to decide this issue, not the courts. But we also wanted on the record at least some minimal information about the fact that men and women are not the same when it comes to combat positions. And what we cited was the extensive research done by the United States Marine Corps from 2012 to 2015, a three-year course of study, including field tests. The field tests definitively showed and scientifically showed that men and women were not the same in a set of tasks that were done by mixed gender groups and all-male groups. The all-male groups outperformed the mixed gender groups 69% of the time. There's a lot of detail there. It's empirical evidence. And we brought it before the court in as short a form that we could, just to let them know that Congress needs to look at this information and decide. And here's why it's important with Selective Service. If you called up millions of young people between the ages of 18 and 25, half of them men, half of them women, knowing that a very small percentage, maybe less than 5% of women would be qualified for the combat arms, what you do is, what do you do with all the rest? Well, you jam up the system. That's what. The purpose of Selective Service, if you have to have a call-up, it's an emergency. You have to move quickly. You have to have that cohort of men who are trainable in a short amount of time to be ready to defend America. If you involve a lot of people who are not going to be physically capable of doing that, you jam up the system. Now, even the 1981 case recognized that Congress knew this. Back then, the issue was easier to decide because women were not used in the direct ground combat units like the infantry as they are now. But the court recognized and Congress recognized that the logistics of calling up equal numbers of men and women wouldn't make sense in a time of national emergency. So in our amicus brief, which was signed also by Eagle Forum, Concerned Women for America, and several distinguished military, retired, and an expert in physiology, we just said to the court, wait a minute, you cannot just assume because the rules change that physiology has changed. It hasn't. And that's why Congress needs to give this more consideration. And the court agreed. And interestingly enough, the Biden administration, Department of Justice, made the same argument we did on the Constitution. What they left out, however, was the elephant in the room, the argument I just explained about physiology and about how different men and women are in positions direct ground combat that involve physical strength and endurance and all the rest. If we had not put that before the court, that information would not have been presented by anyone. There were a couple of feminist groups. They also filed friend of the court briefs, amicus briefs. But the Department of Justice did take the right position. The Supreme Court followed the Constitution. And so we applauded their ruling. And now we're looking to Congress to take a responsible look at this.
So do we have any insight into the court's reasoning in their refusal to hear this challenge?
When they deny a petition for certiorari, they don't have to give a reason. But there was a statement that was appended to the denial, and it was signed by Justices Sotomayor, interestingly, Brett Kavanaugh, and also Stephen Breyer. And they said they agreed with the denial. It was a unanimous decision to deny the petition. But they did say that they may want to look at it again because women are advancing in various roles in the military. But there was a factual error. They were quoting one of the other amicus briefs. They claimed that women are now Navy SEALs. Well, I've checked this out, and I knew it already, but I just confirmed it again this morning. There are no female Navy SEALs. We do have some women who made it through Ranger training. We congratulate them. That's quite an accomplishment. There was a woman back in 1981, I think it was, a woman who made it through Green Beret training, became a Green Beret. There might be one out there recently. But the factual error stated by the Supreme Court, it's a little bit disturbing because errors like that, the Supreme Court justice says it, three justices, has a way of becoming something that appears to be true, but it's not true. But their statement, even though all they said was, we'll wait and see what Congress does with this. Congress is considering the issue right now. In the meantime, there was a National Commission on Military, National, and Public Service, three-year commission. It was established by John McCain, and President Obama made most of the nominations. They came out with a report last year, and they said, yes, it's time women should be involved in selective service. Well, excuse me, that's not a good enough reason. Yes, it's time. Their argument was flawed. My organization also filed a statement with the Senate Armed Services Committee and a letter to Senator Inhofe taking issue with the position taken by the National Commission that pretty much was going to go in one direction, and that was to include women in selective service. So, again, if Congress has not had hearings on these issues in the Senate, not since 1991, I think it was in the 1970s the House has had a serious hearing on this issue. That's a long time. It's about time that they looked at the original data, and including the Marine Corps research that we cited, and then make a rational decision. What is best for our military? What is best for national security? That should be the primary consideration.
How do you respond to the American Civil Liberties Union's claim that the male-only draft is unlawful sex discrimination?
That has not been decided by the Supreme Court. The precedent that I mentioned, Rosser versus Goldberg, did uphold the right of Congress to recognize differences between men and women. So the case that men and women are interchangeable in all combat roles has not been made. So they may believe that, but that is an opinion, not a fact.
Some argue that since there hasn't been a ban on women in combat since the mid-2010s, that makes a male-only draft obsolete. How do you respond to that?
Yes, that argument was made, but it fails for several reasons. Yes, a few women have made it through even the toughest training, but we're talking here not about the remarkable few. We're talking about women in general, women between 18 and 25. There are physical differences here. Again, women have always served, and they certainly will again. We know that. But when you get into the direct ground combat area where physiology does matter, it doesn't make sense to treat men and women exactly the same. This is not an egalitarian thing. It's not a civil rights issue. Military is exempt from civil rights laws for a very good reason. It exists to defend the country. So we shouldn't be putting, civil rights concepts ahead of military readiness. Including women would not improve military readiness in time of emergency. It would actually make it harder to mobilize a force that would be prepared to deal with a determined enemy or an emergency of any catastrophic kind. So, again, that's an opinion. It's not a fact. Congress should make the decision, though. And that's where I think the Supreme Court was very wise to refer to the Constitution in making their decision.
What do we know about the Biden administration's position on the male-only draft?
Oh, I think they will go along with the egalitarian view regardless of the consequences, because that's what the Biden administration does. But when it came down to the law and the Constitution, the Department of Justice did have to agree. They did the right thing for the right reason. even though their brief was incomplete. It did not get into all the facts that we did. With regard to the Presidential Commission report, again, they came out with recommendations, but Congress needs to consider more than what was presented to them by the commission. I thought their arguments were deeply flawed, incomplete, and certainly a disappointment. They had 3 years and $45 million to do their work. But that was pretty much predetermined. That's what they did. It should be looked at, considered, but Congress still needs to do the right thing.
Finally, why does this decision rightly fall to Congress and not the courts?
Because, again, as the Constitution recognized, we have different branches of government and they have different responsibilities. Congress makes the laws. Congress makes policy for the military. The executive branch interprets those laws. And the executive branch also issues regulations that are consistent with the laws made by Congress. But the courts have absolutely no jurisdiction over the military and no expertise. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, in the Roster decision or maybe another Supreme Court ruling, it says that the courts are the branch of government least prepared and competent to make policy for the military. So it should not be handled in that way. There have been actually several cases in previous years and decades that were brought to the courts trying to get an order to get women involved in selective service. They have all failed so far. We don't know what this Supreme Court will do, but what really matters is what will Congress do. We have civilian oversight of the military. That means civilians like us also need to have oversight over what Congress does to our military. Our military should not, their lives should not be made more difficult or more dangerous because of social agendas or woke agendas or anything like it. That is a responsibility for all of us as civilians to say to our member of Congress, we shouldn't be talking about including young women in registration for selective service. It would not improve military readiness. It would be harmful in many ways. I mean, women have really can volunteer, and they have, and they will continue to volunteer for all sorts of things in the military, and we respect them for that. But there's no need to have such an edict, either by Congress or by the courts.
Elaine Donnelly is founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness. She formerly served as the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services and on the Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces. We will post a link to the Center for Military Readiness at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Elaine, thanks.
Thank you.
Dr. John Bombara will be with us on the other side of the break. We're going to spend some time talking about Christian preaching and consumerism. We'll be talking about how consumerism and secularism are related to one another and discussing how the consumeristic assumptions have changed both preaching and those who hear preaching. Stay tuned.
We need people who are well-educated enough to know what the Constitution means, what it says, how its principles work.
Dr. Robert George of Princeton University talking about his presentation on the Constitution and civic virtue at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We need people who are willing to fight for those principles, to call out politicians, whether they're liberal or conservative, whether they are Democratic or Republican, when they transgress against the Constitution. We need a people who are fit for liberty and fit for the rule of law under a Constitution like ours, a Republican polity like ours, established under the Constitution. So I'm really going to be talking about civic virtue and its relationship to constitutional structures and principles.
You can meet and hear Dr. Robert George at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider our beach house. A charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Not everyone is comfortable with new technology. Dial A Podcast gives all generations of your congregation an easy way to hear your sermons, or even devotionals and Bible studies. Once you've completed a simple one-time setup, we take care of the rest. All your congregants have to do is dial the number from any phone to listen to your latest podcast, all at no additional cost to them. Dial A Podcast. Extend the reach of your sermons. Get started at dialapodcast.com now.